Hello and welcome to Keto Happiness with me, Rob Saunders. This is show 3, and on this show we've got the author of The Wellness Roadmap, all the way from Florida. It's Alan Meisner. He's on in a minute. And what is keto? Well, keto is another alternative way of eating. It's where we're burning keto, which is fat, into energy instead of glucose. My diet mainly is 70 to 80% fat, 15% protein, and a small amount of carbs, which mainly come from leafy green veg, nuts and things like that, and a little bit of dairy. Now, before you start looking at a change of lifestyle, make sure you consult your doctor, your physician, or your healthcare specialist. This podcast is strictly for educational reasons only. But also, if you want to start keto, you'll be hearing a lot of things on forthcoming episodes. But to some quick start guides, my friends, the two keto dudes, have a look at their website, Google them. Episode 48 is Starting Keto with Richard and Carl. And also Carrie now. She came on the show last time. Also, I use another website, dietdoctor.com. That's fabulous. Loads of videos and help guides, things like that. And I truly recommend books by Jimmy Moore, Cholesterol and Keto Clarity, William Davis, on Weak Belly. There's lots more out there. I'll be putting links on the website and their Facebook pages in the forthcoming episodes. We do have a Facebook page, which just search for Keto Happiness, spelled K-E-T-O Happiness UK. Soon to have a Twitter page, and we're just working on the website, getting the branding ready. You've probably just seen our logo on there as well, so please follow, please encourage other people. I say the way of eating may not be for you, it works for me, and I've had loads of fantastic benefits. Weight loss is a side effect, but I think the main thing is improved way of life. I've got rid of that mental fog, and I feel happy. Get things done. I've got more energy. I don't necessarily have to go to the gym, but I have to get rid of the energy somehow. But very shortly, we have all the way from Florida, Alan Meisner, talking about his book, The Wellness Roadmap. We'll be back in 2 seconds. And on today's Keto Happiness, we have Alan Meisner, the author of The Wellness Roadmap. And a bit about Alan: just before his 39th birthday, he had a wake-up call while on holiday at a tropical resort. He tried to play volleyball but got too tired to stay in the game. We've all been there. Once an athlete, he made himself go as work stress, as a toxic relationship, and frankly poor health choices have gotten to him. Well over £250 now in old money, as we say in the UK. That's 17 stone 8, or 113 kilograms. So I know, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, Alan. As Alan sat on the beach, the water lapping at his feet, he realized he needed to make the change and decided to improve his lifestyle and reclaim his fitness. Over the next 8 years, he rode countless waves of wellness and fatness. It was a roller coaster ride that made him realise that a decision wasn't enough. So one day, while lying on a bed in a hotel room, hungover and fat again, he made a commitment to his health and well-being. Today, Alan is a National Academy of Sports Medicine certified personal trainer, and a Functional Aging Institute certified functional aging specialist. Creator of the thriving 40 plus fitness community, providing one-to-one group fitness coaching, nutritional guidance, and personal training for clients over the age of 40. So I'm now 51, Alan. And he's also host of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast. And we love podcasts, as you know. And we always try to promote fellow podcasters and programs, websites, social media. And he's interviewed hundreds of health and wellness professionals. Welcome, Alan.
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate being here. Thank you.
Oh, fantastic. And you've got the book out, the Wellness Roadmap. Now, before that, can you just give us a sort of I've given you your biography, but a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, I went through and did the things that I thought a man was supposed to do, you know, focus on your career, be successful, work up the corporate ladder, you know, deal with the daily stress, which, you know, each promotion brings even ever more much stress. But I was at the top, you know, of my game and felt like from a corporate perspective, I had done everything right. But that day sitting on the beach and in the subsequent 8 months, I realized that I had probably done just about everything wrong. I wasn't taking care of my health. I wasn't taking care of my fitness, and I definitely wasn't taking care of my happiness. And I take those three words, health, fitness, and happiness, and to me, that's the core definition of wellness.
Yes.
So sitting on the beach, I was very unwell, mm-hmm. and unhappy, and my whole life was just not what I wanted it to be. And it took me 8 years to kind of wrap my mind around what was necessary to take that next step, to do the right things for myself so I could get well. And that was, it started with the word that popped in my head, commitment. Every successful thing I've ever done in my life, be it pass a CPA exam, be it, you know, the corporate career, getting a promotion, every single one of those things came from a commitment. And I had not committed to my wellness. And that's why I wasn't seeing the results, or I wasn't seeing lasting results, because I would get, you know, lose a little bit and then I'd gain it all back, and I'd lose a little bit and I'd gain it all back. And so it was just a really, really tough journey, which when I started working with clients, which was never really my intention when I started this whole thing, but when I started working with clients, I realized that they needed this roadmap. They needed the kind of the instructions that I used to get down the path and stay well.
Okay. Fantastic. I'd say we've all been there. That's the main reason why I've not just started an eating lifestyle. It's a whole lifestyle that I've started. So the book, The Wellness Roadmap, what's it all about?
Well, what I, like I said, I really wanted to put together something that made it very simple for an average person to come in and say, hey, I know I need to do these things, but I read this article and they say I need to go vegan, and I read this article and they say I must go keto. And then I read this article that said bacon causes cancer and I'm going to die of a heart attack. And I've got my friends over here thinking I'm completely crazy because I'm not eating fruit. And that's the healthiest thing you can eat. And, you know, over and over and over, people are being given information and they really just don't have a plan to see how that applies in their life. And I would love to tell everybody there is this magic route, and you get on that route and it's going to take you exactly where you want to go. But the reality of it is, as we're recording this, I live in Pensacola Beach, Florida. If I wanted to travel to Spain, my route to get there would be very, very different than your route to Spain.
Okay. Yeah.
They're going to route me through Atlanta or Houston or Dallas, and then I'll end up somewhere over there, and I'll eventually get to Spain.
Yeah.
You're much closer, Rob, so you just hop on a Ryanair or something like that, EasyJet, and boom, you're there 2 hours later.
Funny, I was in Boston last year, and we went via Lisbon to get to Boston to get to the right place.
I don't know the math on all that, but somehow it works. But that's kind of the same situation when you're looking at your wellness, is that your path is going to take you different ways. I tore up my shoulder. I had a rotator cuff tear, and I'm at the time 52 years old with a rotator cuff tear. So recovery, I knew for me, was going to be a little bit harder slog than it would have been when I was in my 20s. So, you know, we're going to have these setbacks. We're going to have these zigzags. We're going to have these switchbacks up and down the mountain as we go. And each of us are going to walk a different path.
Sure.
But the cool thing, and this is the wonderful message that's out there, is every breath you take is an opportunity for you to improve your wellness. Because I couldn't lift weights didn't mean I couldn't do anything to improve my health. Because I couldn't lift weights didn't mean I couldn't do anything to improve my happiness.
Yeah.
It just meant I had to have a slightly different focus while I was recuperating, while I was getting the physical therapy and doing the things I needed to do to heal my shoulder.
Sure. So, fantastic. I know exactly, because there's all different routes. I'm a business person as well. Routes to market, and there's all different ways. And in the UK, there's a phrase that says there's numerous ways to skin in a cat.
Yes. We do not want you skinning cats.
No.
Let's just put that out there.
Unless at the end of the interview, we'll go back into the paleo days.
there are organizations in the United States that would. Not too happy with the skinning of cats. Let's just say that.
Right, and so there's all different routes. So the people who can read this, why should you know, you've mentioned that there's all different ways of getting well, keeping fit, the right mindset. Now I'm 51. I'm 52 in December of this year, and the book is. We're sort of aimed at, and your organisation is aimed at the 40 plus. How different is it for people in the 20s versus us, people over 40, over 50?
Well, and I think anyone over the age of 40 can tell you that there's a lot of wear and tear that's occurred on these old bodies as we've grown up. Different movement patterns, sitting in chairs all the time. You know, you're a business person, I'm a business person. We spend 8-12 hours sitting in a chair sometimes, long meetings, lots of stress, lots of things going on. Well, that's a cumulative effect on your body. That's something that over time does have consequences. When you're 20, you can sit there and eat that whole piece of cake and not be bothered by it. You know, your metabolism's roaring. You know, you don't realize, okay, yeah, I just had a big blood sugar surge. I added a little bit of body fat to my body. But because it's just a small percentage of body fat, you don't see it.
Yeah.
40 years later, all those little incremental little bits of fat that we put on our body, they're all there. And they're weighing down on our joints, and they're weighing down on us. They're weighing down on our organs. So we're just not functioning at 100%. And then the other aspect is there is a standard aging curve. It's driven by things like sarcopenia, which is the loss of muscle. Mm-hmm. And it's driven by osteopenia, which is the loss of bone density. So if we haven't been doing any resistance training at all, up through from about 35 to about 65, you lose about 1% of your muscle mass and 1% of your bone density per year. So that's 35 years. That's a lot of bone and muscle that we've lost over the course of the years. And we've probably just replaced it with body fat.
Sure.
Okay. And because we're not lifting, because we're not doing the resistance training, we're allowing ourselves to age faster than we should.
Yeah.
We can actually control the aging curve if we do small little incremental things to improve our health rather than the small incremental things that harm us.
Sure. Yeah, and I know our listeners will probably identify with a lot of the things. I know I definitely, because in my 20s, in fact, I worked for a brewery in my 20s, and I don't remember 10 years of that period. But I think I battered my body. I got up to something like 22 stone just before I got married at 31, and I've been sort of yo-yo dieting between going to getting fit, in terms of physical exercise, to joining clubs, drinking shakes, being sort of bombarded by marketing, things like that. And until sort of clarity over the last few years, I was running around in circles. One minute I was fitting into a 50-inch chest jacket, and now I'm fitting into a 42-inch jacket. But I seem to, I've got that balance right. And reading things like the wellness roadmap, I'm sure, because I gorge on information and books and books and books. I'm currently reading Jimmy Moore's and his wife's new book at the moment about real food. So my next one on the list is yours, Alan.
Well, good.
But back to the book, you say that the Wellness Roadmap is neither a diet nor a workout book. So what is it? What is it then?
Well, like I said earlier, anything that you want to accomplish, it starts in your brain. It starts with a commitment, and it's all starting in your head. And so it's a mindset book more than anything else. So I start with a concept called the Wellness GPS, and the G stands for grounding. The P is for personalization, and the S is for self-awareness. And I'll kind of give you just a couple of examples. So my commitment when I started looking at all this was I realized I was not the athlete I wanted to be. My daughter was starting to get into the CrossFit and the mud runs. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to just go watch her do those things. I wanted to participate with her.
Sure.
You know, for me, watching her would have been great. But I knew I had it in me to be in that race with her and not her waiting on me to keep up. So I set commitments and I set a path to say my vision of wellness is to be able to do these things that my daughter does with her. And that's my commitment. That's my why. My why was my daughter.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted those opportunities to spend time because, you know, with her getting into college and getting out of college, I knew we were going to have a little less time to spend together. So I want to spend, you know, the 3.5 hours of doing a tough mudder. I want to do that with her there. I don't want to just be sitting there waiting for her at the end.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So that was my GPS, was starting with the grounding. The personalization is where you start looking at what are the things that you want out of your life and then setting the specific goals to be able to do those things. So for the tough mudder, I needed to be stronger. I needed more endurance and stamina. And I also knew I needed to drop some body fat.
Sure.
And so that was my personalization, is looking at what were the things that would get me to my vision so I could set those kind of incremental milestones, those SMART goals that get us there. And then the S stands for self-awareness. Now, that's where you go through and look at the physical and mental limitations and capacities. If you just run in there and say, okay, I want to be able to do this 12-mile obstacle course run, and I say I'm going to start it by going out and doing one tomorrow to practice, that's the wrong way to go about doing that. The first practice day is get out and take a 30-minute walk.
Sure.
See how your body acclimates to being on your feet that long. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, you know, in a week or two, you've upped that to 45 minutes, and then you're incorporating maybe some short jogging sessions in there. And over time, you're gently nudging yourself. That's a physical capacity limitation that we have as we're older. Whereas when I was younger, just get out and run. I could run 12 miles and not even think about it. I can't do that today. So the self-awareness of knowing what I can and cannot do, the self-awareness of knowing that if I don't have my gym bag packed the night before and sitting by the door, mm-hmm. I'm more than likely going to forget a shoe or a sock or something that I'm then going to say, oh, well, now I can't work out. So I figured out what my fallacies were. And it's you got to be honest with yourself. That's a really, really hard part of this thing, but that's where the commitment and all of it comes together. So, okay, I'm grounded. I'm personalizing it. So this is really, really important to me. And then now I'm aware of the things that are going to trip me up. And then that sets you up for a really good foundation of going out and saying, I've got strategies. I'm going to try these different tactics. I'm going to build habits and I'm going to make this happen.
So what you're saying, Alan, is like, I always stress, even in business, you got to start with the why.
Yes.
And I think that's what a lot of people don't really realize. Even if it's very, how we could say, more egotistic, you know, I want to lose weight, I want to lose fat because I want to fit in that pair of jeans. I want to do that. Some of the side effects may be, my body is in better shape than it's ever was and I'm eating the right stuff. But I'm just going to be a little bit egotistic. I want people to say, goodness me, Rob, you look great, in the back of my mind.
and I get into that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with vanity.
Yeah.
When vanity is aimed at improving yourself. where vanity goes wrong is where you say, I want to look like Kim Kardashian.
Exactly.
Or, you know, I want to look like whoever that guy is that plays Thor on the Marvel movies. You know, when you're comparing yourself to other people and saying, well, at least I'm not as fat as they are, or I want to look like that. That's when vanity kind of gets you a little off track.
Yeah.
But to sit there and say, you know, I could wear a 32-inch waist jean when I was in high school. Yeah. I want to get back down to my high school size. I'm going to see my classmates at a reunion, and it would just be so nice to be the same size guy I was then, you know, going to my 40th class reunion, you know, that type of thing. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
You've hit the nail on the head there. And I must admit, we've all seen various things coming on social media where you've got some promotions with a guy with his top off saying, if you eat this, you'll look like me. I think we all know who that is, but and I respect, because it's sometimes it's really good science, but the way it is marketed is a bit like your Hello magazines, your Vogues, your Kim Kardashians, that type of thing. So hopefully the way your book is structured and the way you want people to do it is it's structured in a way that no matter what success that you achieve, how big or how small, you take those little baby steps to get to the why. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we're like I said, we're starting with this commitment. And then from the commitment, we get into the self-awareness. We set strategies. Mm-hmm. So I know, put the gym bag by the door so I have to step over it on the way out or I would trip. You know, I grab the gym bag and now I'm going to the gym. At the gym, because now each day I've got this habit, each night put my gym bag together, each day I go to the gym, I'm now developing a habit of packing my bag the night before. It's a part of my bedtime ritual. And then now I'm in the car and I go to the gym and I work out at lunchtime. Yeah. And now I'm getting the things done. So now I can start looking at these tactics. Okay, what kind of weightlifting should I do? Do I want to build more muscle? Do I want to get stronger? Are there certain aspects of strength, like the Tough Mudder? I needed more grip strength. So I was doing a lot more pulling movements than I would normally have done in a workout. You may want to do something more balanced. You might want your tush to look a little bit better, so you're doing a lot more leg and glute work. And that's all cool. You're doing the tactics, putting the tactics in place that are giving you what you want. That's going to help you be successful. And then now that the tactics are in place and you're doing them, you're on the path. Things are going to start happening for you. So many people like to start with the tactics.
Yeah,
they'll see an infomercial on TV of these really fit people doing this certain exercise or drinking this elixir fluid that they, you know, you'll lose weight because it raises your metabolism 300%, and they'll run out and buy that stuff.
Yeah,
and they're focused on the tactic.
Yeah,
instead of going back to the beginning and saying, wait, I got to have the foundation. Yeah, I've got to have the structure and self-awareness. I got to put the strategies in place, let the habits develop, and then I can start focusing on which tactics are going to give me exactly what I want.
Brilliant. Now, people will say, like, I've done my, I'm at my why. I've maintaining this clear mental attitude, this positivity. My weight is stabilized. How do you, can you give a tip on maintaining this sort of these habits even? You know, you've mentioned the gym bag. My habit is, it's the only notification I have on my smartphone is when a new podcast of somebody I like comes up. I don't get any other social media or any WhatsApp or anything like that, because I know I'm going to look forward to going to the gym, working out, and learning something at the same time. So it's not a punishment. It is a treat for me to go to the gym because I've got time with these people like yourselves, like the Keto dudes, like Jimmy Moore, everybody like that. I'm spending time with them and they're feeding me with knowledge.
And that's a big, big part of the book. I did it all in acronyms. So, you know, there was this GPS. The actual work is when you're in the streets. And one of the E's in streets is education. I think it's very, very important for us to find those people that resonate with us and then to experiment with the things that they bring up that resonate with you. If you know it's going to move the needle, and I'll tell you, keto, if you want to lose weight, will move the needle.
Yeah.
I was doing paleo before I found keto, and I just fell face first into keto and didn't even know what I was doing. I ended up in ketosis, and I was trying to figure out what had happened because I had been eating whole food. I'd lost, you know, at that point, 2 stone, 25 pounds, and not quite, not quite 2 stone, but close. And I plateaued. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll just keep working in the gym because what I can't control is getting stronger. You know, what I can't control is my stamina. If I can't make the body fat fall off, well, that's one thing I'm measuring, and that's only one of the many, many things that I was looking at. And so I'll get back to the multiple measurements because that's an important aspect of all of this. But the all of a sudden, I said, okay, I'm going to kind of batten down here and really just eat meat and vegetables. Okay. And I'm going to cut out the starchy stuff. The potatoes, anything like that, that I was eating a little bit here and there of that. So I went away from that cool 80-20 rule that everybody likes to play with. You know, 80-20 will work most of the time, and then you're going to probably plateau, and then 80-20 is not working anymore.
Yeah.
So I went all in. You know, meat and potatoes. I mean, meat and vegetables, and mostly leafy greens. Almost no sweet kind of no root vegetables at all. Just and no fruits at all. And then I started losing weight again. But I also noticed that my breath was not smelling very good. And I'm like, I wonder what's going on, because I had read and heard that when you are losing body fat, the actual fat's coming out of your body through carbon dioxide. And they can measure your body fat burn based on the amount of carbon dioxide in your breath. And I thought, well, I don't think carbon dioxide would cause a smell.
No.
So I started doing some research and said, why would my breath stink? And then I started learning about keto. I'm like, oh, so that's what this keto stuff is. I've gone low carb. I was listening to Jimmy Moore, and I'm like, okay, I've gone so low carb, I'm in ketosis. Mm-hmm. And this was before Jimmy had really done Keto Clarity, before I really read Keto Clarity. Then I started realizing what I had done. And I lost another 2 stone over the course of the next 3 months. And so keto is a good tactic, but don't just run off and try a tactic because it's worked for your brother or your sister or your mother or your aunt or your friend of a friend or this guy that you see with no shirt on Facebook. Their situation might be entirely different than yours. And so, but when you find a tactic or see a tactic that makes sense to you inside your head, the research that you see on it is sound, and then it fits with your values. So someone who doesn't eat animal products because of social reasons or religious reasons, if they want to get into ketosis, it's a lot harder to sustain.
But there is a way.
There is a way.
Yeah.
But that is a very tough hill to climb.
Yeah.
And so you look at the tactics and where it makes sense to you and fits your life. And also, again, the science, and it just makes common sense.
Sure.
There was a guy I was watching on Facebook, and he was following someone similar to what you're talking about on Facebook. And this guy was doing a dry fast. So for 24 hours, he wasn't drinking any water.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay. I said, did he point to any science? Anything, because I said, there's common sense that makes no sense to me at all. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, you know, I just want to lose weight. And I'm like, okay, you'll lose weight. The next morning, he weighed 3 pounds less. Yeah. And I said, okay, that was water.
Yeah.
You know? And then as soon as he started drinking water, he gained the 3 pounds back. But that wasn't healthy. There's no science out there that says not drinking water for a whole 24 hours is good for you. So anyway, make sure it makes sense to you. But the other side of it is this. Our bodies are made to reach balance, to hit homeostasis. Mm-hmm. That's a natural protective part of our bodies because, you know, my ancestry is all from Northern Europe. And there was a period of the year when food was scarce and when we had to go with very little food at all. So our bodies developed this process to hold on to body fat and not let us starve. Yeah. So it lowers the metabolism a little bit. And sets us in a situation where we're just not going to burn muscle and we're going to slowly start eating into our fat stores, but that's going to slow down because we just don't want to starve to death. Mm-hmm. So your body will always want to reach homeostasis. It's anything you do, be it lifting weights, when you first start an exercise, you'll notice your weights increase pretty quickly, and then that levels out. And if you start working on losing weight, maybe at the beginning you lose quite a bit and then it kind of levels out. Those, you know, those are just natural curves for the way things work in our body. Mm-hmm. And if you focus on one thing, like the scale, then you're going to see that scale level out, and that's going to be very discouraging.
Yeah, it is disappointing. But I've done that myself, and I've stopped doing it.
But if you're looking at your leg strength, if you're looking at your blood work, if you're looking at how you feel in the morning when you wake up, if you're looking at how well you sleep, mm-hmm. if you're looking at how well your relationship is with your significant other and your children and your family and your friends and the joy that you have in your life, suddenly that scale value becomes very, very insignificant in the grand scheme of things, okay? So don't just measure one thing. You know, remember, wellness is being the happiest, healthiest, most fit person you can be.
Sure.
And there's a ton of different metrics that measure all of those, and weight doesn't correspond with any of them.
No. It's, I'd say that's why I've named this Key to Happiness, because half of it is got to be about happiness and what you've been saying. And you're right there, Alan, that keto's worked for me, but it's not a one thing does all. There are other options out there which work really brilliantly for other people, and you know, I'm not sort of on the bandwagon like you know, some other people could be. If it works for you, works for you. But that's the benefits of what, and I want to share it. I want to see people with a smile on their face. You know, and
well, I tried pescatarian. Because my doctor, you know, you go in and those cholesterol tests, man, you know, he's like, you gotta do, stop eating the red meat, stop eating the egg yolk, stop. I'm like, okay, I will do pescatarian. Only reason I said pescatarian was I did not want to do the tofu fake burger stuff. Sure. To get my proteins or try to figure out all the different beans and grains mixes and everything I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. That was just too hard, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to sustain that. So I set up to do a pescatarian diet where I was getting macros that were more balanced. So, you know, something like 33-33-33. And what I found was I had to eat all day long. I had to graze. And so I, you know, but what I liked grazing on was fruits and nuts.
Yeah.
And in particular, dried fruits, because mm-hmm. they were much more convenient to keep in my desk for extended periods of time. So I would make my own trail mix, and I would have that on my desk, and I would eat it all the time. And I gained weight. Mm-hmm. Whereas when I'm in ketosis, I don't have to eat when I don't want to eat. Mm-hmm. And so I remember I went up to my property. I have some property near here, and I have a couple ponds, but I was doing some work on the property. And then as I was leaving my property, my truck got stuck in the mud. And so we call it AAA, and in the UK, I think you call it AA.
AA.
So the truck out to tow you away. Rob, one day I'll tell you a story about me renting a car near Heathrow. disaster. But anyway, I was stuck in my own yard. I had to call AAA to haul me out of my own yard. And so the guy gets there about an hour later, which is their guarantee. Mm-hmm. And then his truck breaks down while he's trying to tow me out. And he needs a part. So anyway, 4 hours later, now my truck is out of the mud. And I'm driving home. And I'm realizing I didn't eat breakfast. Didn't eat lunch. I did some pretty substantial work in the morning. I went fishing in the afternoon while he was stuck waiting to fix his truck. So I made a good day out of it. So the happiness aspect was definitely there. I wasn't hungry. Mm-hmm. And I just knew from a lifestyle perspective, if I had been pescatarian at that point, I would not have been able to stand there. I would have walked the 3 miles to the store and bought some crappy carbs.
Sure.
Because I wouldn't have been able to sustain myself. I had to be eating all the time. Whereas when I'm in keto, intermittent fasting can just become a natural part of my day. I can eat when it's convenient. Yeah. And to me, that freedom is just so cool.
And you don't even realize it, you're fasting. You just don't eat
right. Because
you don't need to. It doesn't come into your mind at all. Now, by my desk in the office, I've just got some almonds and some pecan nuts and things like that. And yeah, if I'll graze on them, if I just want to nibble with my cup of tea or coffee or things like that. But, you know, we have a very small breakfast because my wife is on keto as well. And then we think, oh, we better make the boys some dinner now because it's gone over 7 o'clock at night and we're not hungry. I said, yeah, okay, let's do that, you know. So you're right. So, but did you on this sort of journey of yours, did you face any setbacks at all?
Well, over the course of the first 8 years, terrible, terrible setbacks. You know, I'd feel pretty good about myself, you know, drop 28 pounds, 2 stone, 28 pounds or 30 pounds, feel pretty good about myself. And then, you know, something would invariably break my momentum and I would blow it again.
Sure.
And so that was just the lack of commitment. Now, I will say this. I believe that people are opportunistic eaters. And what I mean by that is, if you think back to our ancestors, my ancestors, as I said, were up in Northern Europe.
Sure.
And we're recording this during the winter. And so right now, you walk outside and there's no fruit trees. There's no blueberries. Mm-hmm. There's none of that's blooming at this point in time. None of that's there. What's there is an opportunity to catch fish, an opportunity to catch birds, opportunity to catch small critters. And while we might want to eat some elk, it's very dangerous to hunt those larger animals, the red meat animals of that time. We would do it. We'd do it as pack animals. We'd have a plan so we could do it safely, and we would share the bounty of that work.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we wouldn't do that every day.
Yeah.
Or we would start losing people pretty quickly. So opportunistically, during this period of time of a winter, we would not be eating many carbs at all.
Mm-hmm.
Then it rolls around to spring, and Rob, we're walking along as a tribe, and all of a sudden we walk up on this field of blueberries. And we're going to go ballistic. We're just going to start eating blueberries because we know they're only there for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know? And so we're just going to eat them. And they're easy, and they don't fight back.
Yeah.
So suddenly now, yeah, we're getting rushes of blood sugar. We're starting to put on a little bit of body fat, but that's okay because when we're going to be outside in the winter, that extra body fat's going to help keep us warm, and it's going to sustain us through the winter when there won't be as much food.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that our ancestors went through feast and famine times.
Yeah.
And I've taken that concept and I've blended it into the lifestyle I like to live. So I will go through a famine period, which I'm doing right now. Our American football season is over.
Sure.
My birthday's over. So I'm like, okay, I'm past all the celebrations, the Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the things we do. They're all associated with food here in the United States. And I go through a famine period. So I'm in ketosis and I'll take care of myself that way, you know, for 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll roll around to American football season, and I'll say, okay, I want to go have some beers with my friends. You know, Thanksgiving will roll around for us. That's in November. That's when I spend time with family. I've got a brother who has a brew pub, and so he makes his own beer. I'll go up and try to sample some of his beers.
Yeah.
I'll spend time with my dad. You know, we'll drink some beers. You know, yeah, I'm going to go out of ketosis for that period of time. And then I have a birthday and, you know, all of that stuff that goes on. I want to be able to enjoy those.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, okay, I'm going to go off of ketosis. What does that do? Well, one, I don't get the benefits of ketosis at that point in time because I don't feel as good. My energy level is a little lower.
Yeah.
But I'm having good social interaction time. And if you've read books like The Blue Zones and whatnot, you know that that is one of the core factors of people that live past the age of 100 is that they have really good social ties and they enjoy spending time with their friends and family. And so I go through that period of time. Now, I will preface all of that to say that I'm not metabolically challenged. I don't have any signs of diabetes. My A1C is consistently under 4.9 and usually closer to 4.5. So I don't have any medical reason that I would want to use ketosis as a protocol. If you're using ketosis as a protocol, then this seasonal ketosis that I'm describing here probably isn't for you. But if you know there's periods of time, remember that self-awareness, when you know, okay, I'm going to want to have a beer. And if I have some beer, am I going to hate myself for going out of ketosis? No, I'm going to plan that's my beer season. And I'm going to enjoy a few beers here and there. I'm going to enjoy the sport. I'm going to enjoy time with friends and family. And that's going to be a part of my standard cycle of life.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the film, but I think it's called The Big Fat Fix. And it's by the two guys who wrote a book called The Piopi Diet. And it's based around the Mediterranean diet. And Piopi is actually, ironically, is where Ansel Keys lived a lot of his later years. But it is based very similar around, it is a Mediterranean diet, but you're right, people went to work, they walked to work, so that was their health. They didn't eat until they got back from work, so they'd have one meal a day. But the whole point of their lives was a social. So they'd have a small coffee with a handful of nuts, talking to their friends, with their family, and it was all a collective thing. Now, that's not all about losing weight. That's all about enjoying life. And
yes.
And they call Piopi, which is in southern point of, it's just south of Naples, sort of on that Amalfi coast. They call it the place where people forget to die. And that yes. was quite profound, you know. So, and again, it's not technically keto. It's just another way of. We've got a politician over here, Tom Watson. He's lost drastically a lot of weight, and he's done just by reading this book. And he doesn't sort of shout it out, but we're quite. We've got a great advantage over in the UK. We've got the National Health Service, which is a free health service. We don't have to pay insurance, anything like that. But he's a sort of the opposition party to who's in government at the moment, and he's sort of flying the flag for let's be proactive rather than reactive against, you know, diabetes, things like that. And again, he's trying to push it on the health and well-being rather than just here's a statin, here's some pills, or here's a way, if you drink an 800 calorie milkshake a day, it's going to cure you. Yeah, it may cure you for, you know, 6 months, but you're going to be hitting the McDonald's, your, you know, Dunkin' Donuts and everything like that when you suddenly get that craving back.
Yeah, you know, and that's again, as I kind of talked about tactics earlier, you know, Mediterranean diet, lots of research to support that diet. Now, I used to think that was okay. I can just eat all the pasta I want, and that's not how that diet was established.
It was a treat. Pasta was a treat on weekends.
right. And so I think that's the core of it, is to not get bogged down in the, oh well, that's this kind of diet, or oh, keto just means you eat a lot of bacon and butter. And I'm like, no, I might have bacon once, maybe twice a week, if that.
Yeah.
It's a treat. It's a little bit I have on the side. It's not an entree.
Yeah.
and so the core of this, though, is I've interviewed at this point almost 215 authors.
Wow.
And over 200 authors, and many of them, some of them are vegans, some of them are plant-based, some of them are keto, some of them are Mediterranean, and just about anything and everything in between. And the funny thing is I start drilling into their way of eating. It comes back to one thing: food quality.
Sure. Yeah.
So they're not talking about the instant oatmeal when they eat when they're talking about people should be eating oats. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about instant oatmeal with all the extra sugar, you know. And when we're talking about keto, most people that are really getting into this, you know, the Will Coles of the world, and now, you know, you're going to read Jimmy and Christine's book. It's a very good book, by the way. Christine really knows her stuff. She's done a lot of research for that book, so she should be proud of that book. It is all about the quality of the food. They're not talking about eating just tons and tons of bacon. It's get good whole nutrition from your food, and your body will reward you.
Yeah.
You know, I had a sister-in-law. She was vegetarian, and she was obese. And I, you know, when I first met her, I'm like, oh, well, she's a vegetarian. She should be rail thin. That's what I knew of all the vegetarians I'd ever met were all rail thin. I'm like, I don't understand why she's so big. And I started paying attention to her. M&Ms are keto, are vegetarian.
Of course. Yeah.
So she's eating them by the bag. I mean, just days and days, bag after bag after bag of M&Ms. I think you have M&Ms in the UK.
Oh,
but
yeah. And I must admit, when before keto, when I was over in the States, they do peanut butter M&Ms, which again were my favourite. But now I'm probably going to find a recipe that's very similar to them.
And you can. I mean, that's one of the kind of the cool things is as keto's come along, you've got folks like Maria Emmerich and Carolyn Ketchum, mm-hmm. who've written some excellent cookbooks for the keto folks. So there's a ton of keto foods that are available to you to cook today. But I would still just hamper down as most of what you put in your mouth, you should recognize as food stuff. It should look like meat. It should look like the vegetable. If it's been milled down, ground, chemicals added, preservatives, it's not giving your body what you need. And when we talk about that plateau and we talk about satiation, that's another big part of this whole formula is it's not just about whether your body's getting enough calories. Mm-hmm. If your body's not getting the nutrition, you're not going to get the benefits. And eventually you're going to start having cravings despite the fact that you know you have a gas tank on your stomach that's big enough to give you fuel from the fat forever. Yeah. It's not going to want to use that because it's going to want to force you to eat the foods to give it the nutrition it needs.
Exactly. And again, we're quite, it's quite good over in the UK. I'm coming over again in February to the States, but we were over last July, August, and it was quite a challenge to find like the grass-fed things in the supermarkets because we didn't know where to go. Over in the UK, most things are grass-fed. Organic's quite easy to buy. When people say grass-fed butter, all our butter's grass-fed. There's nothing sort of processed. But what I would say, there are still, in that middle section of a supermarket, it's all the processed foods that entice the children and, you know, the sugar addicts and things like that to stay. And it's the outskirts where you got your veg and your meat. And then on the other side, you've just got your home goods, your razors, your deodorants, things like that. You have to go from one to another and you're passing so much temptation.
Well, the way I like to look at it is, you know, my grandmother walked into a restaurant. My great grandmother walked into a grocery store today. She would not recognize most of what's there as food.
Sure.
So as I go in with my cart, very much I am sticking to the exterior of the supermarket with two exceptions. I will get sardines and tuna that's in cans. Because they're very convenient. If I find myself strapped for a meal, I can have those, and then also the frozen vegetable sections are brilliant because they typically flash freeze those vegetables as soon as they reach ripeness, and because they can freeze them, they can transport them without losing much nutrition. Whereas a lot of the other vegetables are picked in another country, like Chile or Mexico, and then transported there before they're even ripe. And then they spray a little bit of gas on them that ripens them up for, you know, presentation in the store. So there are a lot of things that go on with our food that, can be challenging. Sure. When you see grass-fed, for example, there's not a standard in the United States to what that is.
Okay.
So a lot of them will feed the typically it's a cow or a bison. Yeah. They'll feed them the grass until the very end, and then they start adding grains to fatten them up.
Yeah, and possibly injections of antibiotics and things like that.
Oh, tons. Yeah. If you're not getting, that is one thing that is a little bit more regulated is the organic. Is if they say organic, they're not supposed to be using hormones. They can use antibiotics if the animal is ill, and they feel there's a reason that the animal, you know, they just don't want to spread the infections or the disease. Yeah. They will in fact use the antibiotics for some of the animals, but it's very, very hard. Fortunately, most of us here in the United States have access to local farmers markets and co-ops that are even better. And it's getting better all the time. The more of us that are requesting whole food, it does two things. One is it has the bigger box chains deciding to carry more of it, and it starts driving the price down.
It does.
So it makes it better. It's kind of one of the weird things of right now. We haven't hit critical mass on the supply-demand thing. So the more demand we have right now, the more supply they'll create and the lower the price will go. Now that'll change at some point in time when the demand outstrips what we can do organically. But as it stands right now, the more demand there is for whole food, the cheaper it's going
to
get.
Oh, I hope so, because people go to cheaper food because of their financial situation, and 9 times out of 10, it's rubbish. It's garbage, as Jimmy Moore would say.
It is. And the other bad thing about it is this, and this is one of the things I think you'll notice if you pay attention. If you go to a local restaurant and you order a steak in the United States, the steak will be 8, 12, or 16 ounces. Mm-hmm. Okay, standard serving of beef is 4 ounces. Okay. So immediately they're bringing me at least 2 servings and as many as 4, and I've actually ordered a porterhouse before that was 24 ounces.
Goodness, right?
Now, because this is a grain-fed cow, because of the antibiotics, because of everything else, I'm not getting the nutrition from 4 ounces of beef. I will eat the entire 8, 12, 16. Mm-hmm. And yes, I'll admit, sometimes I even ate the whole 24.
Yeah.
But if you give me a good 4-ounce portion of grass-fed, grass-finished cow that was raised humanely, the quality of the food and the nutrition that I'm getting, I'm going to be satiated by that food.
Yeah.
If I'm getting truly good organic vegetables, the nutrition is there, the micronutrients are there, and therefore I actually eat less food from a volume perspective.
Yeah.
So realize that there are some ways that you can improve the quality of your food that's actually not going to raise the price that much. One example I give in the book is I went and talked to my local grocer because, they have that grass-fed beef, but they have to sell it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's priced higher than the other beef. So someone walks up and they see $8.99 for the grass-fed and they see $4.99 for the standard. They buy the standard because they didn't want to pay the extra $4. But what I found is on early Sunday mornings, they mark down the beef they purchased the previous week.
Yeah.
At least $2 and sometimes $3.
Yeah.
So now there's only a $1 price differential for that much better quality.
Yeah. And what we found at home cooking, because we cook everything fresh now, the only, if we do have any processed food, we look at the back of the label, and if there's more than 4 ingredients, we won't buy it. But also we're finding we're not having that much food waste. Because we're full, we're eating enough. We also, we've little tactics we have small plates. But I'm finding, I can fill the plate, but I'm still full and I have to leave some now and then, you're right, quality of food can make the difference. And people have the misconceived about keto that you're just, you're grabbing a stick of butter and you're just eating it like a Hershey bar, something like that. So no, it's not. It's you technically, if I don't count calories, anything like that, people do. If you think about it, because we're full all the time, we're not eating that many calories and the calories that we are not calories that are rubbish. They are good calories and they're doing wonders for our body. So
and that's the core of it. I'm going to say this out loud, and I mean it. Calories in, calories out does matter. In the grand scheme, it does matter. The problem is you can't really count them.
Sure.
Because it's an estimate how much is in your food, and it's estimate how much your body's burning. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to compare two estimates and create a deficit. I don't know how that makes sense to anybody.
No.
That I'm going to estimate two things. Like, I'm going to estimate my marketing budget for next year, and I'm going to estimate my sales from next year, and I need to make sure the sales are higher than the budget. You can't know that. You have some ideas of, okay, if I eat this kind of, make this kind of advertising or do that kind of thing, I'll get that kind of sales. But so much of that is outside your control to know what it's going to be that, you just do what you can do. And so by eating and getting ourselves into ketosis, our body can tap our body fat. Mm-hmm. So the calorie deficit we're talking about is coming now from body fat. But that means the amount of food, yes, from a total calories perspective, is going to probably go down because you're not as hungry, as you said. We need to make sure that food is as nutritionally dense as possible.
Sure.
Get your nutrition from your food. Yes, you can supplement if you need to. You know, in the cold weather, we're not getting as much sun. We may need some vitamin D supplementation. Sure. You know, we might not be eating enough fish. Fish, a lot of people just don't eat enough fish. So taking a fish oil supplement is beneficial to most people. Mm-hmm. So there are some supplements that are going to be valuable to you, but don't just pop a one a day vitamin and then say, I can eat what I want to eat and think that's going to work in the long scheme, because it just won't. You need to get your nutrition from food.
Right. And we're coming to the end of the show, Alan. I just want to ask a few fun questions. What's your go-to food if you're hungry, or your go-to food if you're having a dinner party?
Very different foods. Like I said, I'll buy the canned sardines, and I'll gladly take the sardines. I'll take two cans sometimes. I'll put them in a bowl. I'll drizzle olive oil. So I don't get the kind. I get the kind that's in water.
Yeah.
I get my own high quality olive oil, typically with something, you know, it can be infused with lemon or something like that. We've got a really, really nice shop here in Pensacola. I'll just drizzle it with that and maybe put a little bit of hot sauce, and that will be a quick pick meal for me. No cooking, no muss, you know, throw the cans away, rinse out the bowl. So my wife doesn't get mad at me at the smell and put it in the washer. That would be that. Now, if I'm going to cook something for a group of people, I do a keto turkey. I love cooking turkey for Thanksgiving. And so I do some things to make there more fat content for a turkey. I also have done a lasagna that's in a Maria Emmerich's book. I want to say, Restaurant Favorites, where she uses, deli chicken, the strips, for the noodles. Wow. And I've also heard of using cabbage for the noodles, which I might try at some point. Yeah. So I'll make a good lasagna, and that'll be a good go-to meal for us when we're having friends or family.
Brilliant. And also, what are you reading at the moment, Alan?
Oh, let's see. I just read, what was the name of his book? Give me just 1 second. I can look it up, because I've got my list here. Like I said, I have authors on almost every single week, so I am constantly interviewing. I just read Joseph Arnold's American Diet Revolution.
Okay.
And he compares the problems that we're having with food today with the American Revolution, the independence from England, oddly enough. He says, we need to declare our independence from the food companies. And the medical establishment. We need to start taking care of ourselves. The information's there, the science is there. We just need to dive into it and figure out what'll work for us.
Fine. And obviously, with the book out, how can readers connect with you?
Yeah, well, I like to set up a separate page when I come on a podcast so that you'll know you're in the right place, and it'll have all the information readily available to you. So it'll talk about the book, it'll talk about my podcast, give you an opportunity to subscribe there. Brilliant. And then also I go into a little bit of the personal training. I do group online training, and I do one-on-one online training. So you can learn a little bit about that there. So you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/keto happiness. And that's just one word, 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/keto happiness.
Yeah, brilliant. And in terms of the book, is it physically? We've got Amazon.co.uk here. Where else can we get it from?
You should be able to buy it online from your local books, from your bookstores. They should be able to find it and order it there. Unfortunately, I'm not a big house published guy, so I'm not going to be on the shelves all over the place yet. I hope to change that over time, but this is my first book. It was a labor of love. I put a lot of myself in there. So if you've liked some of the things we've talked about, if you liked or kind of resonated with the intro, I think you're going to like some of the stories that I share about my personal journey. I don't want it to take you 8 years to figure this stuff out. I want you to figure it out today. And I think the Wellness Roadmap can help you do that.
Brilliant. And you will post things like your social media groups, pages, and all those types of links.
Yeah, you can just look up 40 Plus Fitness Podcast. I'm on Facebook. We have a group on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter. But I just don't post on Twitter that much. I mean, I'm over 50. So Twitter just doesn't appeal. And no, I'm not the guy you're going to see modeling on Instagram. That's not my thing. So mostly Facebook, if you want to reach out there, and you can access all that through the website.
Yeah. I think some of us guys should do a charity calendar to take the mick out of
isn't the objective of a charity to raise money?
Well, listeners, you've been listening to the Key to Happiness podcast with me, Rob Saunders, and my very special guest, Alan Meisner. Once again, Alan, from Hollywell in North Wales to Florida, thank you ever so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Rob. It's been a joy.
And stay tuned for the next episode 4 of Key to Happiness very, very soon.